This is XTP Media.
Hi, I'm Anthony Lindberg, Creative Director at Basic 6, and this episode is brought to you with the support of Basic 6. Basic 6 t-shirts are organic and ethically made. If you want a great t-shirt that shows that you know enough about aviation and aerospace by the designs they display, then get over to basic6.co.uk. Shipped anywhere in the world, you will get a 10% discount by using the promo code EXTENDED. You can only get this discount through this promotion, so wear the Aerospace to be seen in t-shirt. Go to basic6.co.uk. Enjoy the show.
We're ready for takeoff. You're listening to Extended. Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 31 of Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station. And joining me back in the studio today are my very good friends and presenters, editor at Global Aviation Resource, Gareth Stringer.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And, of course, our editor-in-chief of Aerospace Magazine, Tim Robinson.
Hi there, everybody.
In this episode, we have a look at some news. We get a meeting with the men behind Gilo Industries, one of the UK's fastest-growing aviation and engineering companies. We talk to Matt Williams from Air TV about flight training tools. We have a new X10, our top 10 from Tim, along with a great new pods challenge, listener feedback, and of course, promoting aerospace. But it has been a while since we were all last together. Riyadh, Farnborough, Yeovilton aside. What have we all been up to? Gareth, fresh off the treadmill.
As far as I'm concerned, nothing has been happening other than Dawlish Airshow. So anybody that tries to claim anything different, you're lying, quite frankly.
You've been pretty busy, haven't you?
I have. Listen, for those of you that don't know, and particularly those of you that are outside of the UK, Dawlish is a town in Devon, here in the United Kingdom, population 9,000. But last Saturday, the 23rd of August, population probably approximately 109,000, and the reason for that is Dawlish Airshow, of which I am one of a pretty small team of volunteers that puts the show on. So yeah, very, very busy, incredibly rewarding and absolutely knackering, but well worth doing, and already beginning to think about next year, because that's, you know, the sort of fools that we are.
Yeah. From Riyadh through to Dawlish. And Tim, it's been a busy press time at the Aeronautical Society as well.
It's usually the biggest press time. It's obviously not as busy as it was during Farnborough week. But I did get a chance post Farnborough to have a quick flight in a Lockheed Constellation. The Brightning Constellation, which was quite good. A little run down to the coast and back.
There was also a little secret you told me as you scurried off after we recorded that live episode of where you were going to watch the air display.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, that was up on the tower. So I had a bit of a special sort of VIP position on the Wednesday afternoon to watch the Farnborough display from the ATC tower, which is
what differences? I mean, does it make seeing the show from there? Obviously, you're hearing what's going on and you're seeing the show unfold. But visually, how different is it?
It's fantastic. Everything's closer to you. You've got stuff heading over you. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult. Sometimes the stuff is right over your head and in your depending on the display. And other times it's incredible because you've got the things like the A380 kind of curving round. You're thinking that's not going to turn round in the space. And you're just in awe about how close some of the stuff comes. So yeah, it's a great view and very, very unusual. So thanks to Nats for making that happen.
Right, well, we have had a great summer. There's lots to catch up on. So let's crack on and let's get started by look at what's caught our eye in aerospace news. Okay, troubles in the Middle East continue with Iraq and the ISIS challenges. Tim, we've got aircraft out there.
Well, at the moment, it's been humanitarian. For the UK, at least, it's been humanitarian sort of operations. We've had airdrops from C-130Js. We've had Chinooks deployed to Cyprus. RAF Tornadoes now are there in the air giving backup. They're using their recce pods, their Raptor pods, to look for the sort of refugees and what's happening on the ground. And we've also, the latest thing was that the new rivet joints, one of the new rivet joint spy planes has been deployed over there. Crucial for kind of hoovering up electronic intelligence of what's happening on the ground. What's happening with the ISIS and what kind of gains they're making. So this is all adding in. But it's incredible there that because, you know, not only is, the Iraqis fighting ISIS, you've got the US doing airstrikes as well with FA-18 Super Hornets from carriers, possibly strikes using UAVs as well. But also there was sort of ex-Iranian SU-25s, which had been kind of rebadged, reflagged in a bit of painting, and they were signed up for the Iraqi Air Force, and presumably, I would have thought, possibly flown by Iranian pilots. So there's a whole massive kind of mixed, as well as sort of Turkish sort of strikes as well. So whole kind of confusing and a kind of odd battle space over sort of Syria and Iraq right now.
And you mentioned the SU-25s there. Obviously, closer to home, we've seen the troubles in Ukraine. And unfortunately, that day we were at Farnborough was a very unfortunate day for all. But we've seen SU-25s shot down in the Ukraine as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a whole big sort of air war going on as well in there in eastern Ukraine. That's with the government and these kind of pro-Russian rebels who have been taking a toll of helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft, and Su-25s. So obviously, Su-25 as sort of the Russian A-10 has been at the sharp end in both Iraq and over Ukraine, and I think the losses is about four or five SU-25s have been shot down. Ukrainian Air Force SU-25, so that's quite a loss rate going.
It's sad times to see what's going on in the world, but Mother Nature's also having an effect on us here in Europe. Possibly got another threat of a volcano erupting, or it is erupting and threatening air travel. We haven't seen any impact so far. I think the threat has been reduced, hasn't it?
There was some sort of fears of disruption, and there was some sort of airspace closed when people sort of seismologists reported that it might be kind of close to eruption, and there was kind of worries about it. I think the key thing to take about this is that the authorities and everyone is now much more prepared.
Eurocontrol is much better prepared this time, isn't it?
So it's not going to be back. I wouldn't have thought it'd be back as chaotic as it was back in 2010. That was a real sort of bolt from the blue situation. No one ever thought of before. Now I think the plans are in place, the procedures are there, that it would not, you know, even if it did go off, it would not affect air traffic as much.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's rise above the ash cloud. I wanted to pick up a couple of technology stories as well. We've seen in Europe the Galileo spacecraft having a bit of a problem and getting shifted into a slightly inappropriate orbit. But I wanted to ask you, Tim, this NASA project about improving travel times to Mars, it's a bit too technical for me. Is there any way you can put it into simpleton's words?
No. the thing we're talking about here is the M drive, and it was put together by a British engineer called Roger Shaler, and it's a device that produces a tiny minuscule amount of frost. But what the weird thing is about it is it appears to violate one of the laws of physics by not needing any fuel. It's kind of like an iron thruster that satellites use, you know, long duration satellites, you know, they use a kind of an iron thruster. But this is on microwaves, using microwaves. And incredibly, you know, this is one of the things that this guy had come up with this idea. He tested it. Everyone thought, he's a bit, obviously a mad scientist. His results are wrong. Other people have tried to do it. Chinese have did a similar thing. That came back and it was validated. And now some NASA's researchers, it's not NASA themselves, but some researchers have done a paper. They've built the exact same thing. They've come back and they said, it does work. We don't know how it works, but it does.
And so, what sort of benefits will it give us in terms of practical applications, do you think?
Well, the model they've got at the moment is obviously it's a bench model, so you can't be expecting we're not talking kind of warp drive tomorrow or day trips to Saturn or anything like that. But what it does seem to suggest is that whatever effect it's using or whatever effect physics it's tapping into, it's producing a small amount of thrust and a constant sort of small amount of thrust without any fuel is kind of really, really good for long distance space travel. So what the NASA scientists who did the latest paper and said, it works, come out and sort of said this could be the sort of thing that could get you to Mars in weeks instead of months.
Yeah, yeah. Because of course, we've got some great Mars stories coming up as well, haven't we?
Yes.
With both the Americans and the Indians with their probes. So
I think at the moment, you know, it's important not to get overexcited about this stuff. It could be one of those things like, you know, remember a few years ago, maybe in the 90s, there was a lot of excitement about kind of coal fusion. So, this coal fusion, this is going to be the ultimate sort of saviour to energy problems, and people sort of said, we can reproduce it, and then it kind of all petered out, and they're still trying to work on this sort of fusion technology in the first place, let alone coal fusion. So I wouldn't get too excited about it, but it is kind of promising. I'm sure now that NASA have come out and so said there'll be other people kind of looking at it and going, well, you know, okay, let's take this technology, let's scale up a bit, let's put it on a satellite, put it on a space probe, see what happens, you know?
Yeah, okay.
It's worth a try.
Vaguely on that subject, just in case anyone hasn't seen it, there is a film coming out in November called Interstellar, which looks blooming good. Judging by the trailers, you know, it's a Christopher Nolan film, Matthew McConaughey, Michael Caine, I think Matt Damon might be in it, Hans Zimmer's done the music, and it's surrounding this concept of a wormhole, which people may or may not be familiar with, which I think is sort of hypothetical or theoretical concept that if you had a wormhole, it would enable you to travel great distances through space in a far shorter space of time and period of time, and it looks very, very good, and so a bit of a heads up for our space fans if they haven't seen that Interstellar, and I'm pretty sure it's out in November.
Okay, and one to wrap up, let's just get a little bit more traditional, Rotorcraft. Back in episode 19, of course, we talked to Captain Brian Link, who not only was an Osprey pilot, but is a current Black Hawk pilot. Interesting developments in the competition there, Tim, for the replacement of the Black Hawk.
Yeah, this is the technology demonstrator. The U.S. Pentagon now has selected Bell and Sikorsky Bell separately, and Sikorsky Boeing as the second team for two demonstrators for the joint multi-role JMR, so rotorcraft demonstrator. And basically, this is looking at a not only Black Hawk but a Apache replacement in the probably sort of 2030s. Sort of time frame. Bell are going at it with like a sort of a third generation sort of tilt rotor. Looks a bit like a Black Hawk, but if you imagine a sort of a wing on the top and a couple of tilting nacelles. So Sikorsky and Boeing are partnered, and they've got coaxial sort of a design called the Defiant, and that's got a pusher at the back. So both these designs are designed as sort of next generation sort of tilt rotor stroke high speed compound helicopter design. That's the idea, is more speed and to advance the science of rotorcraft. So that should be interesting to want to watch. Obviously, you know, you think how many Black Hawks are in service at the moment, how many Apaches yeah. there are around. And where that goes next, you know, if it works out right, you know, it's going to advance the science and the technology of rotorcraft. You know, although some people are worried that, well, you know, hopefully this doesn't turn into another sort of JSF where you know, it tries to be all things to all men.
And of course, we can't leave the news without having a little talk about all those lovely Merlin engines that have been screaming around the British skies. What an awesome time to have seen these aircraft. Gareth, they visited you in Dawlish.
Yeah, so we're talking obviously about the visit of the Canadian Warplane Heritage Museum Lancaster to the UK, which she got here from a sort of epic transatlantic flight. I think it was on the 8th of August off the top of my head, and has subsequently got a PDA with the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight, public display authorization, and has started appearing at public events and, you know, air shows. And apart from the fact that it is an incredible sight, and the way that they've put the routine together, bearing in mind how little time they had to practice, is brilliant. The thing for me is that it's truly captured everybody's imagination, and, you know, in terms of it, and that is reflected in the social media and, yeah, and the general media. It's been absolutely incredible. I have to say, we booked the Canadian Lancaster for Dawlish Air Show, and about half an hour before they arrived, I was talking to two Lancaster pilots who had come along to Dawlish to the air show. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have been emotional anyway, but it was probably a good job I had my sunglasses on when they ran in, because you... Oh, I kid you not, it's giving me goosebumps now, just thinking about it. It was the sight, the sound, the emotion. I mean, I mentioned how many people we had already. There was a hushed anticipation before they came on. You know, before the Red Arrows come on, there's a buzz of excitement. There was almost a reflective silence whilst we waited for them. You know, we were scanning the horizon to look for them running in, and it's absolutely brilliant. And I genuinely hope that everybody who sees them realizes how very, very lucky and honored we are to have this in our lifetime, because I'd be very, very surprised if it happens again.
Yeah, it was quite an amazing sight, and I very fortunately was sitting at the dinner table with the patio doors open last week with my young daughter and my wife, and we heard eight Merlins. coming across the horizon. And we ran into the garden and we were absolutely flabbergasted to see them flying at 1,000 feet over our house. And I've got to say, you're absolutely right. It was really, really emotional. I mean, personally for me, my mother was is Dutch and was in the occupied parts of Holland. She saw the Lancasters and the American aircraft as well coming across in droves night after night, day after day in the war. And in fact, their village was liberated by the Canadians. So for me, it was a very special moment. And the funny thing about this whole process is everyone's got a story like that. It's quite amazing, all the stories and all the emotion that's come out. So, yeah, what a wonderful, wonderful sight to see.
I should just mention quickly, because Bill Ramsey has been a guest on Extended before, and I was very lucky to interview Bill. Last week, Bill led a formation of three Avro bombers. Bill was captain of the Vulcan, leading the two Lancasters, and they overflew the turf-cutting ceremony for the Bomber Command Memorial in Lincolnshire, and sort of wind their way down to Marham before they had to split. And that again was, yeah, it's all been captured for prosperity from the air, and it's just lovely to see all these sort of opportunities being maximised, and I think we've got some more of that to come, probably with the stuff that's going to happen at East Kirkby later this month or early in September, with obviously a third Lancaster, albeit on the ground, but a running Lancaster. And I cannot wait to see some of the photos that come out from that, because that's going to be 12 Merlins running, all being well, and that's going to be spectacular.
Oh, well, thanks very much for that, guys. After the break, we hear about a great success story in the British aviation sector.
Zeppelin 116, continue holding in position. Traffic across downfield.
Hold
in position, Zeppelin 116, continue right. Flagship 4004, cross runway 22 right. Don't hit JetBlue, United 08. Take Alpha to the ramp. Monitor ground point 9. Have a splendid day.
Cross 22 right. Don't hit JetBlue, Alpha to the ramp. Flagship 4004.
You know, because when we say give way, that's what we really mean.
Yeah, I know.
Envoy 3509, Kennedy Tower, cross runway 21, runway 2 right, line up to wait.
Envoy 35.
Number 782, turn right, taxi on Juliet, hold short of runway 2 right, remain this frequency.
Juliet, short of 2 right, remain with you, Delta 782.
Delta 782, do you happen to know what gate number you have today?
Yes, sir, we do. It's gate Bravo 33.
Thank you. Delta 782, new plan. Make it Zulu Hotel and hold short at 22 right.
Zulu Hotel, hold short 22 right now for Delta 782.
American 1549, maintain runway heading, contact New York departure. Au revoir.
Runway heading, arrivederci.
Sir, we need you down in Atlanta.
Well, you need a little planning?
No, we need your personality.
You can't make jokes in Atlanta, though. You see what happens.
Yeah.
It's all about timing.
That I've always said.
Hello, this is David Vanderhoof, the Airplane Geeks Historian, and you're listening to Extended, the podcast with the Continental Flair.
I got the chance to go and meet the team from Parajet, who we did a brief segment with at Farnborough. It was a great day, and apologies about the wind creeping into the recording towards the end. We were standing outside the offices. Upon arrival, I went into the main offices in probably the prettiest aviation manufacturing and engineering facility I've ever seen. I met up again with Tom Prideaux-Brune, Managing Director of Parajet, and he took me on a tour of the engineering and assembly plant.
So, paramotors-wise, so sort of our flying backpacks, yep, or your powered paraglider, yep, everything that goes internationally, global, is everything's made here.
Right.
And then in a box and out the door.
Yeah.
And as you can see, the guys are feverishly working away on, I think, approximately about 25 machines at the moment, which all have to go out next week.
All right,
so,
okay.
So, no pressure.
So, business is good.
It is good, yeah. It's always up and down. It's one of those sort of kind of unique industries where which is just about getting the message out there. More people find out about it. It's a fantastic sport. It's incredible fun. You should have a go.
I will one day.
You should do. we get Dino to give you a tandem flight.
Okay.
But really, it's a lot of it's down to people knowing about it. The exposure of the sport, and that's why we work so hard about doing things like Farnborough, Goodwood. All these sorts of events, which aren't necessarily, I mean, Farnborough's related to flying, but things like Goodwood or motorcycle shows or anything, it's to capture people's imagination and say, actually, hang on a minute, guys, you know, this is within reach. I myself have always had a love of flight, and that's how I ended up here. I realised that I had a helicopter lesson, I had a split wing lesson from my parents, you know, as birthday presents, that sort of thing, when I was younger. I just sort of realised, hang on, you know, even if I do this, there's no way I'm actually going to be able to afford to buy a plane or a helicopter, unless something dramatically wonderful happens.
It's really affordable, though, isn't it?
This stuff is, I mean, if you think in terms of aviation kit, this stuff, for less than 10 grand, that's you, all your kit, and all your training. And then you're good to go, and that's it. Running costs, you know, you could fly sensibly for an hour on 4 litres worth of fuel.
What sort of fuel does it use?
It's just regular unleaded petrol with a two-stroke oil mix.
Okay.
And there are some four-stroke engines, in which case it's just straight petrol.
Yeah. Right.
If you compare that to any kind of other aircraft, you know, 4 litres an hour is nothing. So for less than a tenner an hour, you can bomb around in the skies quite happily.
Yeah.
And you know, it's incredibly flexible. The kit does literally disassemble and pack down the back of your car. You can keep it at home very easily. You don't have to be necessarily a member of a club. You don't have to have hangar fees. You haven't got to continuously certify your equipment like you would have a larger aircraft.
Yeah.
So it's all these kind of sort of benefits, really. Most importantly, it's opportunistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when the weather's good and you have the fancy, just get it out and go. And that's really what captures people's imagination, I think, because we speak to a lot of guys who've done, you know, split wing license and PPLs and other types of stuff like that, and it's lovely. They love it, but they never get to fly because they're always too busy, or they have to book it so far in advance, and it costs so much, and all these types of things. And whereas with a paramotor, you know, as you can see from outside in the car park, mine's attached to the back of my car. So as this morning, I was flying.
Right.
Tomorrow morning, I will be flying because the weather's good.
Yeah.
And it's there, so it lives in the back of my car or in my garage.
Right. No landing fees. No.
Nothing. No. You know, just a friend with a field or some common land. Yeah. It's important to sort of point out at this stage that actually we do fly responsibly. You know, we're not just kind of cowboys of the sky.
Yeah.
We do try to sort of be courteous to those around us. You know, a paramotor, rather like anything with an engine, does make a noise, but it's not that noisy, especially when you consider that we're flying at a reasonable height.
Sure.
So, you know, taking off from places where you're not right next to someone's house. So doing a little bit of research or having, you know, talking to a few people. A huge number of guys, local farmer, would you mind awfully if I took off there? As long as you're not doing anybody any harm, then go for it. So, and as long as you're not flying in anywhere that's a restricted airspace, so no towns, cities, airports, you know, army bases, that kind of thing, then you're good to go. So it's super fun. It's super easy to get into. But do, you know, take the time to do it responsibly, and then you will just enjoy it. People will enjoy it more, and the sport will continue to thrive.
Yeah.
Whereas if you know, act like an idiot and and crash it the first time and kill yourself, it's not going to reflect well.
Okay. Looking at the craft that we have, what do you call them? Do you call them aircraft?
Technically, you would call it what's called a powered paraglider.
Right.
So paragliders are the guys who use just thermic action. So those guys you see with a similar glider to us. They jump off a hill.
Yeah.
They use the thermic action, so the
rising
of heat. Yeah. Great fun paragliding, brilliant. But the difference is, I guess, is that relies very much on the conditions.
Yeah.
Now, we have to have good weather.
Yeah.
But they need the right type of conditions that allow them to keep up. So it's very much harnessing nature.
Yeah.
Whereas we've got a powerhouse on our back, and that creates our thrust. So so essentially we're in control of our own destiny. We don't need to drive somewhere to a mountain to fly off it. We don't need it to be super warm. What we need is just for it to be relatively not windy.
Yeah.
Anything from sort of 15 mile an hour downwards is very good.
Right.
Closer to zero, the better, really.
Yeah.
and then you're off. So
okay. And in terms of putting the units together, what are the major elements that go into making it? Are they all assembled here?
Yeah, absolutely. Every machine that we produce is assembled here.
Right.
We don't have any other manufacturing facilities for the power motors. Yeah. in some cases, a client may already have an engine, in which case we can supply them with a chassis and they can install the engine themselves. But actually, from a complete machine perspective, everything is done in-house here.
Right, okay. And how long does it take to make one?
That can vary, really. It depends on the type of the machines that we have. I mean, just to explain, we have two different concepts. We have one, which is the latest one, our new release here, which is our new Volution 3 power motor. So it's the sort of third edition of that style. And this one is mainly fabricated by using rolled material. And this one's actually a bit of a crossbreed. And then we also have the Zenith, which is the machine I think you probably saw at Farnborough, which is wholeheartedly CNC manufactured.
Right.
And it's, again, all sort of very specific size individual pieces. Yeah. So two completely different concepts, benefits to each. But everything is made in-house here. So all the welding is done in-house here. Right. All the machining is done in-house. Literally, if we can make it, we will.
Right.
Rather than outsourcing. Things like the engines these days, we used to produce our own engines. we don't anymore. The focus has now gone towards the rotary sort of sector, which isn't so practical for paramotoring, just simply because of the costs involved. Number of large sort of Italian companies particularly have come into the paramotor market in the last 10 years with big budgets and sort of a pedigree in that type of engineering. And it just means that they're able to produce sort of very good quality, low cost two-stroke engines. And that's why we've aligned ourselves and we work with the best.
So we
provide absolutely top quality chassis with really good safety features, built with very good materials, and then incorporate a good quality engine that's got a good backup and good warranty and that kind of thing.
Wow. Okay. We then had the chance to find out more about the company from Gilo Industries Chief Executive Officer, Jim Edmondson. What a success story Gilo Industries is. Can you just tell us a little bit about its history and where all this came from?
Yeah, it's an extremely exciting story. We started in 2001. My business partner, Gilo, saw these paramotors and, like most young guys, thought to himself, well, I really want to get flying. How can I do that? And saw these paramotors and thought, well, there's an aircraft I can pack into the back of my car. You don't need a license to fly. It's foot launched. Great. What a great way to get into the into flying. And the more he explored it, the more he realized there wasn't really a brilliant product out there at the time. So he started designing his own product and came up with our first design of paramotors. And it kind of, that even predates that in a way, because when he was 14, he made his first two-stroke engine. So a real entrepreneur, real designer and kind of creative mind. And really the whole of that company, Parajet, got launched onto the map in 2007 when we did a Discovery Channel documentary, and Gilo did it with a guy called Bear Grylls, and they decided to try and fly over Everest. And that led to another exciting development, because to get a backpack aircraft that is foot launched up to 30,000 feet is actually very difficult, and everybody listening to the show knows that the higher you go, the less oxygen there is. For an internal combustion engine, that's very difficult to get to the height. And Gilo developed this rotary engine that was light enough to carry on your back, but it was 92 horsepower. So there they were, laden with all this weight at 15,000 feet at base camp, and Bear did a successful flight up to 30,000 feet. Little did we know at the time, but millions of people watching this Discovery program. And
I remember it.
There you go. So, and some of these people have to be junior engineers at some of the biggest companies around the world. And they rung us up the next day and said, well, you know, we're actually looking for these lightweight propulsion systems. And that's how we got into the foray with the rotary engines and supplying extreme applications with our rotary engines. And that was the launch of Rotron. And then from there, we launched another two companies. So a research company that does mod projects and another company that makes parts for helicopters.
Yeah.
And then we formed the group.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about Rotron, because that's another success story coming out of the stable, should we say, and one product in common. I did an interview with Ego a while ago, just before they got the aircraft flying, and you supply the engines.
That's right. Yeah. So we did the engine for the Ego aircraft. And as I'm sure everybody in aviation will say, that if you want to make a million in aviation, start with a billion. Yeah. So essentially for us, Ego just happened to be one of those exciting projects. And we're thrilled by the actual project. It's a very exciting aircraft and a really lovely development project. And what they needed to get to the 115 kilo SSDR weight range was a very high power to low weight engine propulsion system. Well, and that's specifically what Rotron does. And so it does it for all types of applications. We've developed a 200 horsepower motorbike, which is 136 kilos. We've done all sorts of propulsion systems for many of the major primes around the world now. And it's all based upon our unique patented technology to take the Wankel engine to the next stage and get rid of a lot of the kind of areas where it wasn't reliable.
So, and it's kind of a bit of a bad rep, the rotary engine in the past, but you've certainly hit a spot, a sweet spot with it. Talking about UAVs potentially, and of course heavy fuels as well.
That's exactly right. So that was our big launch at Farnborough. I think the thing is, within the markets that we're looking at, the niche markets that we try and do, so lightweight portable generators for special forces and areas like this, the run times aren't the same as you would do in an automotive application. And automotive applications, it's not the best engine to use because reciprocating engines are better. But as a lightweight propulsion system, it's fantastic because it gives you a huge amount of power density for a very small amount of weight. Yeah. There's no vibration.
Yeah.
And the areas that we've managed to overcome, so for example, heat buildup in the middle of the rotor, we've now got to a point where we've managed to come up with patented designs that extracts that heat from the centre of the engine.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because heat's a real problem with this type of engine traditionally.
That's right.
And again, you seem to have overcome it.
That's right. So we have, I mean, I don't know how much detail I can go into, and especially it's hard to describe.
And I wouldn't understand probably.
Anyway. No, I'm sure you would. But we've come up with different ways of extracting calories of heat from the centre of the engine, which increases longevity. And really for most of our customers, that's the key thing, is keeping an engine going for longer while keeping the weight down. And so that's been our key area. And also the main area that I think a lot of people who think back to the era of Norton and the first Mazda cars will be very aware of side sealing and the apex sealing issues where you get blow pass from the gases.
Yeah.
And that is one of the big issues. And so that's another issue we've solved using ceramic seals and different technologies.
I then asked Jim about the link with Martin Baker.
So 2 years ago, we were searching for our first actual seed funding. To that point, since 2001, it had all been organic growth.
Yeah.
And we'd done it all by ourselves, so a lot of kind of living on baked beans and that kind of thing. And Martin Baker happened to be looking in the industry, around the industry, looking for young, dynamic companies to invest in. And it seemed like the perfect fit. So for a company that has an incredible history, 60 years of making ejection seats, and they're respected all over the world, and each one of their seats has to be kind of modified for each aircraft, and it's very much like our propulsion system. So it was a very good fit, and they've really helped us drive us forwards.
Right. Well, it's certainly exciting. It's a buzzing venue to be at. I really think that there's energy in this place. Tell us a little bit about Gilo Industries around the world then.
So we've got all sorts of customers around the world, and we're now starting a new manufacturing centre in the Middle East. It's the same size, basically a mirror image of what we're doing here, to supply to Middle Eastern markets. That's very exciting for us. We've also got a manufacturing partner in the US that manufactures our rotary engines for the US market. They prefer the made in US badge. And we're now, well, Parajet goes from strength to strength as a backpack aircraft. We've got distributors all over the world. We're now manufacturing parts all over the place. So yeah, it's a great story. But mainly, I think our biggest emphasis on this is about made in Britain for us, and the fact that, you know, from a core group of three guys starting a company to now being employing 40 people in the local area in a very rural area and coming up with some interesting technologies is a great success story.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. And when I met Tom at Farnborough, I certainly felt I had to come down. So thanks very much. I know you're very busy, but it's the right sort of busy.
Thank you very much.
Not to be missed, we then had a few minutes with Gilo himself. I'm with Gilo Condazzo, and you're the technical man behind this whole industry. You're so young, and there's so much energy. I can feel it going on. Tell me a bit about your story.
Okay, well, I started the business back in about 2002, making backpack aircraft.
Yeah.
Paramotors, basically. So you strap an engine on your back with a propeller.
How did such a young chap get into...
Well, I always loved making stuff, right from the very beginning, since I can remember, really. And I this kind of... machine caught my imagination, this idea of this backpack aircraft. So I couldn't afford to buy one. It was a Japanese company at the time making them, but I couldn't afford to get one. So I thought, well, maybe I could have a go at making my own thing. And actually realised at the time that there was once I taught myself to fly it,
yeah,
that there was just such a sort of gaping hole in this, it's a small market,
yeah,
that really I should get on and make them myself and produce and make a company making lots of them. And I wanted to share the kind of exhilaration of the whole thing with other people. That was the main thing. I mean, I suppose I got completely... I got crazy about it. I mean, literally, it was such an exciting sport that I thought more people should be doing it.
And you've built a whole portfolio and stable of products and services. What's coming out next that you can tell us about?
Well, the next major project we have going on right now that we launched is the new kind of Parajet flying car, which we call the Skyrunner, which is kind of what we think is the ultimate recreational machine.
Yeah.
It's brilliant fun on the road and off-road, but you can also fly it. And what we're kind of putting out there is a new kind of sport. It's a kind of concept where you can fly around at 5,000 feet at 50-60 miles an hour, but also when you want to, you know, when the weather gets bad or you want to kind of go to town, you can actually land it and go somewhere on the road, which actually hasn't really been achieved yet on this planet.
So many have tried. What do you think makes the Skyrunner different?
Well, we've approached it from a different way. We've said, look, why don't we get a really good ground vehicle to fly rather than a really good aircraft to go on the ground? And that's a big difference there, because we're not trying to replace the general, the everyday car, but we're trying to create a recreational machine. And you can't do a very good job of that if you've based it all around an aircraft, because it's never going to be very good on the ground at all. What we've said is, let's make it brilliant off-road and on-road, really exciting to drive.
Yeah.
But that it can actually fly as well. And it's a limited aircraft. You can't fly it at 150 miles an hour. It's not a really brilliant mode of transport, but it's a lot of fun. And that's where Parajet is all about recreation. It's bringing aviation to more people.
But the whole feel for your business is it has a lot of energy. It has a lot of fun. Mm. It has a lot of... it has a positive feel about it. Is that what keeps driving you guys forward?
I think that's really the drive behind the whole business, actually, is creating fun, exciting products and also just share that with more people in the world.
Yeah.
So, we create something that other people have a go at.
Yeah.
And it's not exclusive. And it's not too expensive. It's meant to be something that, you know, not anyone, but a lot more people can do than the normal general aviation.
Yeah.
And that is the driving force behind the business completely. Yeah.
Right, Jalia, I know you're busy. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes.
No, at all. Thanks so much for your time.
Finally, I had the chance to ask Tom about some special projects for Parajet. So, Tom, we've met Jilo, we've met Jim.
Yeah.
It's a great industry, but other areas you're moving into, defence and using as an aerial platform for the Parajet. That's an interesting development.
Yeah, I think it's not limited. I think that's the key thing we're looking at here, is that it isn't a matter of whether it's for defence or whether it's for search and rescue. It's the fact that it could be used and can be used for all these different types of things. So what we're trying to do is to actually say to people, look at this fantastically sort of cost-efficient, adaptable product, this machine, which can be used so easily, trained, the pilot can be trained incredibly easily, it can be used in sort of numerous situations and be very effective at doing it whilst being cost-conscious.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a replacement for a helicopter, it never will be, but several times or several situations it can be used as an alternative, and actually probably a far more suitable alternative than using a helicopter for something such as a large aircraft doesn't actually need to be used for.
Sure.
If we use search and rescue as an example, a guy, an operator or the pilot can be, he can dispatch himself incredibly quickly, he can unpack his kit, he can take off, he can be there on scene providing real-time information to the guys below, telling them specifically where the people are, what the conditions are, what equipment they're going to need to bring with them, and he can do that all very efficiently at a low cost. Whereas using something like a larger aerial vehicle like a helicopter would be vastly expensive. So it's about trying to actually drill into people, kind of get them to understand, hey, look, you know, open your mind to having a toolbox full of different things that you can use to get the job done, and then almost training people to actually analyze the situation and say, right, under these circumstances that is the most suitable piece of machinery that we have available to us at this time, and it actually will save us money by using it. And that's and I guess that's the key. You know, we're all trying to be a little bit more cost conscious.
Well, good luck with that. The Skyrunner has some potential as well, doesn't
it? Very much so. I mean, it's anything from boys' toy to, you know, kind of border patrol to to anything really. Again, rather like the paramotors, there's a huge number of uses for it. I guess as we move forward we'll figure out which is the sort of the stronger market for it. But more than anything, it's just fantastic fun
and exciting times. Congratulations.
Thank you very much indeed.
I've just left one of the most positive UK aviation stories I've heard for some time. A British engineering company based in rural Dorset driving aerospace innovation in a growing sector of aviation. What a great team. What a great story. Okay, guys, as Tom said there, here's a company bringing aviation to more people. Now, to most of us, it's not a traditional form of aviation, sitting in a cockpit in an aeroplane, but they're certainly doing their bit. £10,000 and you're up and going, trained and off. Anyone interested in possibly doing that? Has anyone done that? Powered parasending?
Yeah, but it is tempting, though, isn't it? I like the idea that, you know, you can keep it in your garage or keep it in the back of your car, and you know, you spot a bit of spot a bit of sunshine, and you know, whoa, you can take off, you know, and fantastic stuff. And you know, the stuff there also was quite, you know, it's quite sort of high tech. You know, you wouldn't think of it. It's quite high tech, the engine sort of technology, and you know, lightweight materials and you know, things like that. And you know, when I was at Farnborough, you know, sort of seeing their all-terrain vehicle, you know, Skyrunner thing, you know, really did was,
it's awesome, isn't
was,
it?
Was
Mad
you
Max,
know, you know, looking like kind of something that you know, sort of James Bond would kind of you know, should be in a Bond film. You know, really did get a crowd of people kind of gathered round it and wanted to find out more. So you know. Great stuff, you know, really, really, you know, encouraging.
Well, if Tom does come back and invite me down for a flight with one of their dual instructors, I will, of course, take my recorder with me, as well as a spare pair of trousers, I think.
And a camera, please.
But let's move on. It is a little while ago now. I got to speak to Matt Williams, who runs and is the brains behind Air TV, about his innovative training videos. Matt, welcome to Extended.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for joining us. Now, Matt, Air TV is your product and your service, but I'd like to know just a little bit more about you, because you've got quite an intriguing background. How did you get into aviation?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's something that ever since I can remember, it's all I've ever wanted to do. I, from a child, always wanted to fly in the Air Force. And I'm fortunate enough that, you know, through the ways and means that I went about things from then, I've managed to achieve what I wanted to do.
Yeah, but it didn't all work out originally, did it?
It didn't, no. So I was in the Air Cadets and obviously flew from a young age through that, and was fortunate to be supported by them. And I applied for a sixth form scholarship when I was in the sixth form to join the Air Force as a pilot. And basically got rejected. I got all the way through the process of the Officer Air Crew Selection Centre, and thought I'd done fairly well, and then got rejected because I wasn't competitive enough initially.
Yeah. And Matt, how did you? That's a real blow. How did you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge setback initially. As I say, it was pretty much all I put all my eggs in one basket, and that was what I was aiming for. But I had a computer business when I was much younger, and I was fortunate enough that I made a bit of money from that, which I then used to travel to America. As soon as I finished my last A-level exam, I got on the plane that day and flew out to Florida to do my PPL.
Right.
And spent about 6 months out there in total, flying a number of different types and building up my hours.
Yeah. Where did you fly in Florida?
I flew from Ormond Beach.
Okay.
With a company that have closed down now, but it served the purpose of getting me the experience in the air, getting a license and getting some hours built that way and a few types under my belt.
It must have been some computer business you started
as
a youngster to have financed that trip.
Yeah, it was. I mean, again, it was something that I was quite heavily into, and I think I hit the kind of personal computer age
yeah.
at exactly the right time. So I was building computers from home.
Yeah.
My parents' house was covered in computer parts all the time, much to their disdain. But yeah, fortunately,
right, you know, okay.
that managed to fund me through, and it all worked out quite nicely in the end.
So 6 months in the States, a newly minted pilot. What happened next?
Yeah, so while I was in the States, I was offered a job out there flying commercially.
Yeah.
And tentatively accepted that. But at the same time, I applied for direct entry into the Air Force as a pilot with my kind of new experience under my belt. And I was fortunate enough to again get through OASC and this time be offered a place in the Air Force.
Right, okay.
So I kind of packed my bags and flew back across the Atlantic and started down that path.
Right, okay. And just a quick overview then of your training and into your RAF career.
Yeah, so joined the Air Force in 2003 and spent 6 months at RAF Cranwell at the Officer Training College. I then moved to RAF Woodvale and spent just over a year there doing my elementary flying training on the tutor. I was streamed fast jet initially, and then...
Is that every budding RAF pilot's dream to be fast jet streamed?
I would say the majority probably, yes.
Yeah.
There are a few, I think, who come in and are, you know, committed to wanting to fly either rotary or multi-engine fixed wing.
Yeah.
But I would say from experience that the majority of people join with a view to becoming a fast jet pilot.
Right, okay.
You know, as you would, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was streamed fast jet initially, but timing didn't quite work out. And I held for a year to go to Linton-on-Ouse and then... was told during my hold that the taps had turned off, basically, and I was offered a place at RAF Shawbury to do my rotary training.
Right.
So I went through the squirrel there. So it's about 18 months at Shawbury. I spent 9 or 10 months flying the squirrel in the basic and advanced single-engine role.
Yeah.
And then in the Air Force, you then go on to 60 Squadron, and fly for about almost another 12 months, I suppose, on the Griffin. And you do multi-engine, multi-crew type work, and you go into the tactical training phase, effectively, before you then go onto the front line.
Right, okay. And so did you serve on the front line?
I did, yes. So when I finished on the Griffin at 60, I was streamed onto the Puma.
Right.
So 6 months at RAF Benson doing the operational conversion flight there, and then I went out to Northern Ireland, RAF Aldergrove, and spent 3 years based in Aldergrove, and that was on 230 Squadron. And from there, I went out and flew in Arizona to do desert training, then went out to do a tour in Iraq over Christmas and New Year, obviously serving on the air bridge out there.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, followed back to Northern Ireland and spent probably the next 2 years training all around the world. So I went to Kenya, did a couple of tours in Kenya. I've done Arctic training in Norway, so spent a few months out in the Arctic Circle.
Yeah.
Doing day and night training out there, which is interesting in the snow.
Yeah. Just digressing a little bit, in terms of flying in those conditions, horizons are a key part. I was listening to something recently about landing on aircraft carriers in the night, and the pilot said the biggest challenge was that you have no horizon.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, and that is key, really, especially as kind of helicopter pilots. We rely all on, you know, the seat of the pants and the attitude of the aircraft is key, and particularly in the Puma 1, as it was then, the instrumentation that we had was very basic and old. So it was a real challenge to fly, particularly when you get into the dusty environments and you lose all those visual cues that we rely on so heavily as pilots.
Sure.
And it's even worse in the snow because it's kind of generally white on a cloudy grey or white background. So and you've not even got the horizon in the distance, or, you know, as you come out of the dust cloud. So a very, very challenging environment to operate in.
Yeah, well, you've certainly seen your fair share of different flying environments.
yes.
So where are we now then, Matt?
Well, I moved into an instructional role after my frontline tour, my first frontline tour, and I taught on 60 Squadron then. I then moved back to the Puma, and I've taught operationally on the Puma 1 and the Puma 2,
yeah,
as it is now. And that's kind of led me to where I am at the moment with the Air TV side of things.
Yeah.
I've realised that...
So you're still serving with the RAF?
Yep, still in the Air Force.
Okay.
I'm an instructor on the Puma Force at the moment.
Right, okay.
And I think it's kind of led me down the line of, you know, I've been exposed to the kind of flight safety arena and the CRM side of things, and very quickly realized that we all share the same, you know, we all share the same piece of sky.
Yeah.
And actually, it's all about looking after each other and keeping each other safe.
Yeah.
And if one thing that I've seen in my, you know, 2,500 hours of flying in different places, if someone reads one article or watches one video and something drops in the back of their mind whilst they're flying or while they're planning or when they hear someone else, you know, deciding to go and do something, and they think, oh, actually, hang on a minute, I've read about that, or I've seen this somewhere before,
yeah,
you know, why wouldn't you share that information, really? And
yeah,
and that's where I'm coming from. It's what I'm passionate about. And
yeah, okay, so let's talk about Air TV for those who haven't seen it. Great name, by the way.
Thanks.
What is Air TV?
So Air TV is a website which is dedicated to providing free training, effectively, and free tools to help people learn about aviation. At the moment, we're a little bit short on content. Obviously, we're hoping to expand that quite quickly, but the subjects that we cover are everything from principles of flight all the way up to operations, and kind of I learnt about flying from that article, that kind of thing. That's where we are at the moment. It's quite an exciting thing to do. We've had lots of interest from it.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's just about providing, you know, I don't understand really why people charge thousands and thousands and thousands for this information.
Hmm.
When really, it's the kind of thing that I believe we should be offering for free. And as I say, if it helps one or two people avoid a situation, or indeed if it sparks them to get into aviation,
yeah,
and follow, you know, realize that actually it's not quite as scary as all these 1960s and 70s textbooks make out. If I can do it, anyone can, trust me. So
it's really funny, Matt. I was lucky enough recently to have a flight in the Tiger Moth, and I was talking to the pilot who's a QFI.
Yes.
And she said exactly the same thing. And I think if I've heard that once, I've heard it 1,000 times.
Mm.
And I think sometimes when you're a student pilot, it's slightly overwhelming because you think, well, you know, it's easy to say because they've done it. But you've still got to do it, haven't you?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
You've still got to do it. So that statement of, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, proves that, you know, you really can if you've got the drive, enthusiasm, and the resources. And unfortunately, in this day and age, the resources may be a bit more challenging than they have been. But it's really encouraging to hear people like yourself saying that. It does give us students, and I'm one of these 15-year students. So.
Yeah.
Never quite dropped out, never quite finished, never quite got on. So it really is encouraging to hear that that you say that. So getting back to Air TV, where's it go from here?
Well, I'm hoping. I mean, my main ambition now is to set up my own flying school. So it's going to be a few years away yet.
Yeah.
But from my experience of instructing and teaching on the ground and in the air, that is where my kind of passion lies. So
right.
I'm hoping that this leads on to that eventually.
Mm.
So the aim is to build up a whole kind of library almost of material which people can learn from.
Yeah.
And the PPL, fixed wing and rotary is what we're looking at doing, will be free. It'll be completely free. We want a forum on there which people can ask questions. We can all help each other out and just try and build a community, you know, to get people involved and keep them safe. The kind of add-ons to that are that eventually there will be commercial training on there, so the ATPL ground school, both for fixed wing and helicopter, which will be a premium service, if you like, so there will be a charge for that, and that will lead into hopefully the flying school, where we can provide the practical aspects of that as well.
Well, it's certainly something we're keen to support.
Excellent.
We're also keen to support you in your day job as well, so all the very best in that as well. Where can the listeners find out about you online?
So the best place at the moment is www.thisisair.tv, and that's where all of the website is in there, and all my contact details are on there as well. Direct contact details for myself, so and we've got a Skype username up there, so whenever I am around and in the office and writing more videos and articles, then I tend to switch that on. So if anyone wants to get in touch or and have a chat, or you know, drop us an email, then feel free to do so. It'd be great to hear from people.
Is there anything that you want or you'd like to ask the listeners to do, other than just to engage with you? Is there anything out there that that they can help with?
Yeah, well, one of the big things about what I'm trying to do, as I say, trying to provide this information and get out there, is going out and meeting people. So, you know, if people do have, for example, if they're in a flying club and they would like me to come down and have a chat on a club night, or, you know, even pop down and just say hello, or if people are struggling with their, you know, an aspect of their training, then just give me a shout and we'll see what we can do to help out and spread the word. Ultimately, that's, you know, that's where we want to be.
Okay. Well, we'll help to continue to promote that. It's a great initiative, Matt. Very well done for getting it up and going. And thank you very much for joining us.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Peter, I think it's Matt's passion for the whole thing that really comes through for me. As you guys know, I met Matt at REAT this year, and he just struck me as being a guy, one of these pilots that's just passionate about aviation, full stop, and wanting to, you know, try and make, you know, pass the knowledge on and help other people. Very, very similar to John Duke, we get into flying. Same sort of ethos behind the whole thing. I think that definitely comes through, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's a very likeable chap. And for anyone who wants to look at a career story, and of course he says there that he is an instructor on the Pumas, amongst other aircraft, but he was streamlined fast jets and it didn't quite work out, and very easy to drop your head, fall out, give up, but he ploughed on and is at the top of his game, and has seen service, and bless him for that, and now he's coming out, as you say, to give something back. So well done, Matt.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, watching his videos as well, having mucked around a little bit with, you know, editing videos, and, well, I still do, but there is an awful lot of work that goes into it in, you know, creating a video and editing it and getting the right sort of software for it and all the rest, and the graphics. So, you know, it's an immense amount of work.
Yeah, well done. Well done, Matt.
6022 heavy, descend and maintain 11,000, then reduce speed 210.
Roger, descending 11,000, then reduce speed to 210 knots, New Zealand 6022. Left head 020 to intercept the runway 35 left, localizer, New Zealand 6022 heavy.
Air New Zealand 6022 heavy, speed at your discretion, contact tower now on 133.3, have a good day.
I'm Peter Dixon, and I listen to Extended, the ETOPS aviation podcast.
Tower Delta 630 heavy, speed 7 left.
630 heavy, Atlanta Tower, wind 2314, runway 27 left, Atlanta.
Atlanta 27 left, we do not have a gate yet, so we might want to figure out some place for us to park while we sort it out.
Delta 630, go around. I'm kidding. That was 6:30. If you're landing, I got no one behind you. Expect to exit right to second high speed. We'll hide you out somewhere down by Papa. That was 6:30 heavy. You copy?
Sorry, take
him. Expect to exit the second high speed, November 2. That was 6:30. You're spinning land on 27 left.
Send us around. That was 6:30 on the go.
8:30 hold short runway 27 right at Tango.
Hold short, 27 right at Tango, 8:30
Got a 6:30, climb and maintain 4,000, turn left heading 180.
Climb 4,000, turn 180,
Got a 6:30, maintain 4,000, turn left heading 180, please.
Delta 6:30, heavy is turning left to 180, back down to 4,000.
8:30 on the town, 123.85. All right, Delta 6:30, hold on for me 1 second. Let me get a heading back to you for the downwind, please.
Delta 6:30, right.
Delta 6:30, heavy, turn left heading 100.
Upturn 100, Delta 6:30, heavy.
Delta 6:30, heavy, you can contact approach on 118.35. We'll get you right back in.
1835.
Delta 617, on the town, 123.85.
And now to our X10 Top 10. Tim, over to you.
Okay, drum roll, please. This week, this month in Extended, it is our top 10 Extended worst aircraft in history. This month on Extended, we look at some of the worst aircraft in history. Bad designs, immature technology, dangerous to their pilots, or simply the wrong aircraft at the wrong time. Let's take a look at some the worst offenders. At number 10, Messerschmitt Me 210. Designed to replace the Buffer 110, the twin-engine Messerschmitt 210 heavy fighter suffered from terrible handling and sucked in valuable resources just when the Axis war machine needed them. Finally fielded in 1942, it was almost immediately replaced by the improved Messerschmitt 410 and the aircraft it was supposed to replace, the Buffer 110. At number 9, the BE-12. The BE-12, British First World War aircraft, was a single-seat scout, general-purpose aircraft, developed from the stable and ponderous BE-2 that had the unfortunate timing to enter service in 1915, just when the Germans had invented the concept of the single-seat fighter with forward-facing guns with the Fokker Eindecker. You can guess how the rest went. At number 8, the Grumman XF-10F Jaguar. Proof that sometimes great aeroplane manufacturers have off days, the 1952 Jaguar was a swing-wing development of the Cougar and Panther from Grumman Ironworks. However, odd handling vices meant it suffered from massive controllability issues and was severely underpowered. At number 7, Blackburn Firebrand. Middling performance and a long time from design to production were one thing, but the creme de la creme of the 1945 Firebrand naval strike fighter was placed in the cockpit right back from the long nose, a critical design flaw in an aircraft that was supposed to operate from a carrier. Captain Eric Winkle Brown described it as a disaster as a deck landing aircraft. At number 7, Supermarine... Number six. Supermarine Swift. A disastrous swan song to the iconic Supermarine name, the 1954 Swift was designed as a high-altitude interceptor. However, it suffered from a number of teething problems, including poor handling and being unable to use the afterburner at altitude. Relegated to the low-level recon role, the entire project cost £500 million in today's money. At number 5, Messerschmitt Me-163 Comet, another design from the last days of World War II Germany. The Me-163 was a rocket-powered point-defence interceptor with a phenomenal climb rate. However, it managed to kill more of its pilots than the enemy, and was particularly tricky on takeoff and landing. To top it off, the volatile fuels were corrosive and could literally dissolve the pilot. At number 4, Yak-38 Forger. When first spotted during the Cold War, this Soviet Harrier-like naval VTOL fighter caused concern among NATO. However, an endurance of about 20 minutes and minimal weapons load meant it was never in the Harrier's class. It was even so dangerous to its pilots that some Soviet pilots in naval aviation even refused to fly it. At number 3, Bolton Paul Defiant. I know, said someone, let's stick a four-gun power turret on a single-engine fighter as a day bomber interceptor. All well as good, unless the bombers have escorts, in which case the slow, heavy fighter with no forward guns becomes the airborne equivalent of a sitting duck. After a very brief moment of glory at the start of the Battle of Britain, when the Luftwaffe mistook it for hurricanes, the Defiant was chopped from the skies, withdrawn from the day fighter role. At number 2, the Douglas X-3 Stiletto. Proof, sometimes the if it looks right, it flies right rule goes straight out the window. The futuristic 1952 Douglas X-3 Stiletto was designed to go Mach 2 as a high-speed research aircraft, but was seriously underpowered and could not even break Mach 1 in level flight. Looked good on the ground, though. And at number one, General Aircraft GAL-56. If your tailless experimental pilot is difficult to fly even by the world's most highly skilled test pilot, that might be a clue to go back to the drawing board. This 1944 prototype was described by Captain Eric Brown as an aircraft which he could not relax in even for a second. Apparently Brown went out to flight engineer observers to test this aircraft, as no one could be persuaded to go up for a second flight. And that's our top 10 extended. So what's your world's worst aircraft?
Do you know what? I'm really struggling with that. When you first started off, this is very unfair, but I started thinking about the Brabazon.
Cool,
and,
yes.
And I just wondered, could it creep into the top 10 worst aircraft? But I quite liked it. It just was an utter failure, wasn't it?
But wrong aircraft for all time, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Let's develop a turboprop, you know. Let's develop a piston engine, you know. And in the meantime, you know, technology's caught up and leapfrogged you.
Yeah. How about you, Gareth?
funnily enough, I don't know. It's always a bit difficult to know whether you're being a little bit unfair, but I always think of the Bolton Pool Defiant that was designed to be an interceptor aircraft but had no forward-firing guns. I always thought that was something of a drawback for that aircraft. Gloucester Javelin?
Ooh, yes.
Is that unfair?
Yeah. I think there was in the pilot's notes for that something like don't do aerobatics or something. It was something like where it was... loop is not recommended, or loops are illegal in the second. It's kind of, it's a fighter. The other fact is, it could get into the deep stall condition with a T-tail. So
that's right.
Massive thick wing. That's pretty cool. Massive thick wing and unpleasant. Yeah, you know.
So I think there's certainly plenty of those prototypes from the 50s and 60s which are quite hysterical.
Well, let us know what your worst aircraft is. Hashtag X10 top 10. And we'll maybe keep that debate going. I think that might be a popular one, I think, Tim. So after the break, we'll come back to the get involved section of the show.
Short 19-7655.
Canberra Jazz 3212, you'll follow the Jazz for spacing number 1. Hello, hold short 1-19.
3212, short 19.
Mercury 5921, we're coming down the river for 19.
All right, we'll keep coming on down, Mercury 5921. This is the Washington Tower. Traffic will hold, runway 19, you're cleared to land.
Clear to land 19, Mercury 5921.
Condor 1, do you guys plan on continuing to the south?
Ma'am, we're heading north.
Okay, Condor 1, if you would just hold your present position. I'm departing runway 15 with the gas on a 150 heading.
Condor 1, roger.
He would just pass behind him as he rotates and departs to the southeast.
Condor 1.
Brickyard 3212, contact with Potomac Departure, we'll see ya. Brickyard 3878, there's helicopter traffic to south of the departure corridor for 15. They're going to hold for you. The wind 190 at 10, runway 15, you're cleared for takeoff.
That is very kind of you. Cleared for takeoff on 15, Brickyard 3878, here we go.
Yeah, not today.
Thanks.
Brickyard 3878, contact Potomac Departure, you guys have yourself a good, safe day.
Thanks a lot. You guys have a great day, too, 3878.
Condor 1, thank you, sir. You guys can proceed on course. JetBlue 844, turn right at Fox, contact ground point 7, we'll see you.
JetBlue 844, Fox, I like you. Take care.
I like you more.
I can't stop that. Alaska 764 is again.
Hello, Alaska 764, Washington Tower. You're number 2 on the approach. Traffic will hold down here, runway 19. You are clear to land.
Thank you, sir. Land 19.
Lotel, Blue Streak 4680 is on a 7-mile final for runway 19.
Hey, Blue Streak 4680, Washington Tower, you're number 2 on the approach. Traffic will hold, runway 19, you're cleared to land.
We love hearing from you. Clear to land 19, Blue Streak 4680.
G'day, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran from Plane Crazy Down Under.
And you're listening to Extended.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now, Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of Extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Over on Twitter, Hushkit sent us a note about the US Army's Ringwing Transformer. Strange story of the Convair Model 49. Maybe that could have hit your list, Tim, earlier. So we'll put links to that with some photos in the show notes for anyone interested. V-Force Rod, very nice to meet me at Yeovilton. Thank you very much to you. Neil Graham, loved the Yeovilton episode as well. Joseph Fibril, loved the outtakes, especially those beautiful sounds. They gave him the chills and he needs more. So they were very popular using the aircraft sounds as the outtakes. So we'll try and pick up a few more of those as we go along. Tony Heyman actually went out and said he loved the interview with the Empire Test Pilot School, the test pilot. Really enjoyed that, by the way. He said it was really inspiring to anyone looking for a career to start as a stoker and to make it to a test pilot. So he loves the program, listens to it on his lunchtime walks, and the 16-year-old in me would love to have joined the Navy after that interview. So, yeah, really good feedback. Thank you very much for that, Tony. We are trying to see if we can do a feature on the flight school there, so stay in touch with that one. Let's go down a few more. Neil Braden, Glenn Towler, Amy Parkin all gave us positive feedback and posted pictures for us. Over on Facebook, Paul DeMarco. Now, Paul sent me a message. I won't read it all out, but I'll give you the highlights for it. He said, thank you for reading his mind on episode 30 with the soul reverberating soundscape of those takeoffs and flybys in the blooper reel. He had a quote unquote bad week. But listening to that at full volume and subwoofer at full had him grinning like he hadn't since his first solo. So he got a few cars to move out of his way on that day. Thank you for a wonderful podcast. So thank you very much for that, Paul. Glad you appreciated it. Dave Homewood from New Zealand, of course. Dave sent us a link to New Zealand's own Rocket Lab, building their own rockets down in New Zealand. So we'll put a link to that very, very interesting article, which showed that there are aerospace industries around the world that are booming, not only here. Feedback on the live episodes that we did over the summer. Of course, we had the interview with Gareth at RIAT. We were at Farnborough and then at Yeovilton. They seem to have been very popular, so we're really pleased. Dave Homewood again says he thought they were very good. On the other side of the world, I cannot attend any of the UK air shows, and so having the coverage from all of them was really great to hear. Please keep doing this and feel free to make the episodes longer. please cover the Warbird air shows too, especially those that will have the two Lancasters together this year. So you've had a bit of feedback there, Dave. Neil Graham gave us some feedback. And over on iTunes, Mehdi Azaray, I hope I've pronounced your name correctly, Mehdi. You left us feedback on iTunes last month, and we're very, very appreciative of that. We do have lots of new listeners. If you're a new listener and you listen to the program through iTunes, please can you leave us some feedback? It does help us to stay in the rankings and keep the episodes popular. And because of that, more people get to see it and then can download it. So it's not just about egos here. It's about getting the word spread around. So please, if you can leave us feedback, we would greatly appreciate it.
And we'd like to request the option for 26 Foxtrot.
26 Foxtrot, after the option, what would you like?
I would always do one lap of the pattern.
Remember 26 Foxtrot, negative third starter, the pattern is full.
All right, we'll just go. We'll head out after the pattern for a right north departure.
I'm just kidding. I just wanted to say that out loud.
Ha, right on. Touche.
November 26 Fox, that runway 24, clear for the option, and you can remain in the right closed traffic pattern, room 190 at 9.
For the option for right closed traffic, 76 Fox.
Aircraft 60, Tango frequency change for good.
All right, you have a nice evening, too. I guess he can buzz the tower then, huh?
Permission denied. 5.149 or frequency change for
5.149, thank you.
Okay then, I'd like to just bring up a quick item here. And then last year we ran the Aerospace X Awards at Christmas, of course, in our 12 Days of Christmas episode. This year we're going to run the awards again, and we're going to run 6 awards. We may well do the 12 Days of Christmas, but there are going to be 6 awards. I'm going to read out the categories to you because they're up for nominations. Category 1 is Best Aerospace Watch, which of course was won last year by the Braymont MB2. Category number 2 is the Best Product Help in the Industry, and of course Dragons of Thin Air won that last year. Category 3 is Best Airport or Best Airfield or Landing Strip. Now that can be anything from a small landing strip up to an international airport, and of course last year that was won by the friendly guys at Compton Abbas. Number 4 is Best Online Resource, website or technology related site, whatever it may be. Of course Live ATC won that last year. Category 5 is the Best Restoration Project, which of course was Lusty Lindy last year. And finally, the extended Best Aerospace Product, which of course last year was won by the Big Book of Flight. So I'll quickly run through those again. It's the watch, Best Product Help in the Industry, Best Airport, Best Online Resource, Best Restoration Project, and extended Best Aerospace Project. Now, we're seeking a sponsor for this year's award trophies. It's not a large amount, so if you can help us, please message me for some more details. The sponsor will get headline position on the episode, along with their name mentioned several times throughout that episode, as well as their name on the award certificates as well. Remember though, once that episode's recorded and up, it's there forever. So if you do support that episode, you will have that advertising slot forever. This year, we hope to get some glass engraved awards to go out to those winners. So it's well worth having in the display cabinet for those who are successful. If you want to make a nomination, you can email us at x10d@mail.com. That's x10d@mail.com. You need to give us a contact name and a reason for the nomination. We will only assess submissions against a strong, justifiable and supported case. So, for example, if you want to nominate an airport, tell us why, tell us what's good about it, tell us where it is, and give us a contact at that place to liaise with, should they be successful. We will allow self-nominations and submissions, so if you're part of a company, team or organisation, that's absolutely fine. Airports can self-nominate, or if you just like what you've seen, you can just send it in yourself. And hopefully we'll want to wrap that up by November. So if you want to send in a nomination, x10d@mail.com. Okay, every episode we give away, of course, a copy of Doug Worrell's book designed to help those 1 in 4 people afraid of flying. And this episode, it goes to Tony Heyman. So, Tony, thank you very much for your feedback. Do drop me a line and send me your details and we'll get that off to you. Thanks again to Doug Worrell for very kindly providing these books for you, our listeners. You can, of course, always buy a copy through our Amazon link on the website. Back over to challenges, and here's Amy with our latest Pods Challenge.
Hi, Peter, Gareth and Tim, and everybody listening to this episode of Extended. I have a new challenge for everybody this episode, but it's not really a challenge, it's just more sort of a catch-up. This episode, I would like to know, what has been your aviation highlight this year so far? I have a couple. In fact, I have a few, and I'm actually going to share them this episode because it's not often that I do share them live on an episode. And I'd like to, because the first one includes Gareth Stringer. I finally met Gareth at Waddington, and it was so nice to meet you, Gareth. We've known each other for almost 3 years now, and it took us 3 years to meet up. But yeah, I really enjoyed meeting you, and you were really nice, so I hope we can meet up again soon. My second highlight is that the F-18 was back at Waddington, the Swiss F-18, and I absolutely love that demo. It's up there with the Dutch F-16 for me, and it was really nice to see them back in the UK. They seemed to have a lot of fun while they were here, so that was nice to see as well. And my final favourite was the Dutch Hunter at Waddington. That blue note was everything, and I'm so glad that I got to see it. I missed it on the Saturday, and I cried a lot because I was so gutted. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. So yeah, what has been your aviation highlight of this year so far? I can't wait to hear the responses, and I shall see you next episode. Bye, guys.
Go on then. Okay, aviation highlight of the year so far, I think would probably be in... that's a tricky one. Yeah, probably be in the desert in Arizona, having a personal air show from an Apache and a little bird. It's part of a media tour, and getting up close with them of basically a sort of kind of like a, I would say it's a firepower demonstration, but having a little bird whiz over your head and then do a kind of return to target kind of manoeuvres, and an Apache as well. That was pretty cool, and both of them kind of hovering together, you know, in the middle of the desert. That was pretty cool. But it's not quite my top one. My highlight will be hopefully in September, when I get to. I haven't seen the two Lancasters together. Duxford Sunday and the Duxford September air show. I'm thinking that will be the highlight. So seeing 8 Merlins. And possibly yeah. more than 8 Merlins if some of the Spits get airborne as well.
Now, Gareth, after that gushing set of words from Amy about meeting you earlier this year, what's your aviation highlight?
Other than meeting Amy.
Of course.
Presumably. And Amy, I'm sitting here probably glowing slightly. Very, very sweet of you to say that. And it was genuinely lovely to catch up for the first time, having chatted away for so long. Listen, I'm gonna let me put the Lancasters to one side, because we've already talked about them, and it's almost a given that they're up there. So just for the sake of argument, I'm gonna pick something else which has been very special for me this year, and two words: Red Arrows. And it's the team's 50th display season, and at Rayat this year, for the first time, I got to interview Red One, who's squadron leader Jim Turner. And just last week, as part of to sort of launch Dawlish Air Show weekend, I was part of the team that arranged for a high-speed train to be named after the team. And all of the team came along to Exeter Station on Thursday for a train naming. And just really highlighted, if it needed highlighting again, for me, the incredible popularity of the team, how proud everybody in this country is of the team. And they're genuinely a great bunch of people to work with. And it's been an absolute honour and a privilege to work quite closely with them on a couple of occasions this season. And just as a personal thing, and it is a very personal thing, that's made me feel very proud as well. So that's what I'm going to nominate.
I'm welling up here, Gareth.
you haven't done yours yet?
No. Do you know what? I just don't know where to start. Of course, I was so lucky to have a flight in the Tiger Moth. That was a very, very special time for me, particularly as my dad had learnt to fly all those years ago in one. So that was very special for me. I will say it again. Seeing those two Lancasters was just unbelievable, and to have them over my house was just awesome. Can't say any more. So I'm sure lots of people will say the same thing, but I've got to add that. But, you know, this year's been a great year for Extended. We've been out and about a lot. We've worked hard to bring some really great content to you. And I've really, really enjoyed some of the interviews that we've undertaken. Mentioned one earlier, and that was the pilot that we met at Yeovilton, the Empire Test Pilot School instructor. That was quite an interesting interview. But one of the ones that seems to have really stuck with me, and we got a lot of positive feedback about, was the segment we did on the test aircraft, the A350 Airbus, and the test pilot there. And I look back at those two guys. I met them within a couple of weeks, and I just thought they were just so grounded and such down-to-earth individuals. But here they were, you know, they're the test pilots of today, taking these very new aircraft and throwing them around the sky. And I just really enjoyed talking to them. I've had a fantastic year, but the Tiger Moth, the Lancasters, and some of the people that I've met have made this a fantastic aviation year for me.
Great stuff.
Right, well, we want to hear what your aviation highlight of the year is so far. So don't forget, it's hashtag PodsChallenge. If you don't want to use Twitter or Facebook, which of course we use as our main mechanisms for delivering material in between episodes, then do email us and we'll make sure that that gets circulated or read out in the next program. So don't feel that you've got to comment on Twitter or Facebook if you're not a follower, but do please email us. Okay, over to promoting aerospace, and I'll just kick this one off. We've been approached by the Farnborough Air Sciences Trust, and you know we've featured this organisation many times on the show because it's a very important aspect of the UK's aerospace history. Well, they are centred in a Grade 2 listed building overlooking Farnborough Airport. Now, they are looking to rent out one of their offices in their building, and it's been recently refurbished. It's to let, and this is to support the trust and is ideal for a small company, but particularly those with an aviation background. Now, let me just tell you a few of the things that you will get if you rent this office. Of course, it's in a secure perimeter, which is locked and secure, but of course that does overlook the Farnborough Airfield, and from my visits there, it's very, very, very close to the approach to the airfield. So if you're interested in seeing what goes in and out of there, it's a great place to be. You'll get use of the historic Trenchard conference room for larger meetings. You'll get free access to the museum, and of course it's only 10 minutes to Tag Farnborough, so if you're flying in and out of Farnborough, what a better place to base yourself. But the bottom line of this is that the rent for this office is only £500 per month. Now, that to me seems like a very good deal. So if you're interested in some office space, you couldn't do better than to help these guys out. If you're interested, we'll put links to the show notes, but very quickly you can speak to Brian Luff or Graham Rood on 01252 375 050. Tim.
Yes, okay, well, I think probably what for my promoting aerospace is just a reminder that after the sort of summer break, blow me on trumpet here a little bit, but the RAS events calendar diary schedule is back into full swing. So if you are near any of our branches, you know, check out what's happening on the website, lectures near you. We've also got some really, really good conferences coming up. European Rotograph Forum, that's happening in Southampton in September. We've got something on International Pilot Training Consortium at the end of September, and we've got a really sort of standout space conference coming in October, where we've got the heads of head of NASA, head of the Russian Space Agency, someone from China coming as well, ESA speakers, people from SpaceX, Virgin Galactic. It's a right. I mean, you know, the the kind of speaker list is it's out of this world. have a look there, and you know, all the lectures are free to come to. You know, members and non-members. The conferences are and seminars. You have to pay for, but if you're a member, obviously you get a discount.
Yeah. Now, Tim, there's also, for those interested, and we do get lots of comments about this everywhere we go, you've got your careers event coming up, I think, in a month or two's time, haven't you?
That's right, yeah. The careers are sort of will be going into higher gear as well, so look out for those events.
Yeah, and they're free, so to members and non-members, so if you're interested in, yeah.
Education and Skills Conference on Wednesday, the 1st of October. Yeah, so if you are a careers advisor, if you're into outreach, educational skills researchers, youth specialists, if you're that kind of person trying to kind of communicate, science, STEM subjects, or trying to get across the excitement of an aerospace or an aviation or a space career. That is something for you. That's 1st of October in London.
Okay, Gareth.
I just want to give a quick shout out to something that we covered quite recently on Global Aviation Resource, but something I think is very important, and it's the campaign to save Black Mike, which is an F4 Phantom XV582. It's one of the few, actually, you know, so many of these aircraft were reduced to scrap when they were retired from the Royal Air Force. Actually, not that many complete airframes left. And Black Mike is a significant airframe in herself. She was, as the name indicates, it was painted in a gloss black scheme by Treble One Squadron, and flew in that scheme as well. And that she was painted like that to remind everybody of the Black Arrows, but also the Lightning eras for Treble One Squadron. And she is complete. She's one of the few survivors which could be returned to a taxable condition, which would clearly be, you know, fantastic. And what an addition a Phantom would be to the likes of, you know, Buccaneer and Lightning and Canberra, VC-10, Victor that we've got. And she is basically being put up for disposal, and this is because of the Royal Air Force moving out of RAF Lucas. And there is now a campaign with a sort of growing groundswell of support to see if enough private donations can be garnered to buy the airframe on a charitable basis. And we'll put I won't run through all the links now, because there's two or three that have a tell you how you can donate money, but also if you want more information on the aircraft, we'll tell you more about her. But this is an airframe well worth saving. It's not going to be cheap, but as I say, well worth saving. And it's a campaign that it would be fantastic if people could get behind. And it is one of those that actually, you know what, to a wealthy benefactor, dare I say it, you know, it'd probably be peanuts, but it would save a very, very important airframe and potentially allow people to see her in a running condition. So that's the campaign to save Black Mike.
Good shout.
And she's Black Mike because she was M for Mike on her tail as well, in case anyone's wondering.
Okay. Now, just before we leave you, we're planning several future shows. We've got some great guests lined up, and some interesting content. And of course, one of the things about Extended is we try to bring you those stories and those features that don't always necessarily hit their headlines, but the sorts of guests that you would like to hear a little bit more from, and some of those subjects. Now, we have a feature in the pipeline with a guest on Flight Sim. With a Flight Sim focus. So if you're interested in that as a subject, send us your questions and comments and we'll get them to our guest so we can bring them up during the show. So you can email them to us or message them to us and we'll pick those up. So if that interests you, send us your questions or your comments and we'll hopefully see if we can deal with them on the show.
Just to clarify on that, I think we want to point out that it's flight simulation as in consumer flight simulation, not in sort of level D simulators. That the airlines
use. Good point, Tim. In fact, though, maybe we'll pick that one up as a separate issue later on, maybe next year. That's one that we can pick up. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a consumer flight sim focus, of which I know you have a strong interest, Tim.
guilty as charged. Yep.
That's a yes.
Yeah.
Okay. A firm.
Okay. We'd like to thank White Hearts, Live ATC and Peter Dixon for their contributions, and to, of course, as always, to Doug Worrell and to Basic Six for supporting Extended. A very big thank you to Amy Parkin for another great Pods Challenge. We do want to hear your thoughts on that one, so do tweet or Facebook us, or if you want to, email us. And we do use Twitter and Facebook as our main engagement tools in between episodes. So if you don't follow us, then you do miss out a little bit on all the things we circulate and share in between shows. So if you're interested, look us up at Aviation Extended, all one word, no leading E in front of Extended. Of course, our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website. Please do ask before using anything you hear. So it leaves us to find out where we can find out about you online. Gareth, where can we find you?
I'll get to that in a second, but most importantly, if any listeners have got any spare nominations for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, I've just realised I missed a trick when I did mine, because I nominated my good friend Angus Nairn, who runs the air show at Throckmorton and who helps out at Dawlish, my sister, and also the attack helicopter display team from the Army Air Corps at Wattisham Airfield, when really I should have nominated my colleagues from Extended.
Right.
So if anyone has got any spare nominations, please, 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 Nascot Hornet and RAS Tim would undoubtedly, because I don't think either of them have done it yet, and I
haven't
quite
I?
Happy
I,
to,
I thought
to take
I thought
quite
I
happy
had
to take it back.
If, I thought if, I had.
No, I don't think you have.
No,
no, I don't think you have.
I did say you
so
were
please,
my good
please,
friend
please,
at the beginning of the show, but you're pushing it now.
It's all a very, very good cause, and so please, please, please get nominating. I'm Gareth_Stringer on Twitter, and you can find Gar at globalaviationresource.com.
Tim, how about you?
Okay, and I am Arius, at Arius Tim R on Twitter, and you'll find out all about me and the Royal Aeronautical Society at www.aerosociety.com.
Tim, can you just spell that Twitter handle out just for whoever nominates you for the Ice Bucket Challenge, just to make sure they get it correct?
Tim R.
You can no longer find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter, and you will never find me at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well as on Facebook. I've disappeared. And on that note, it's the arrival of the music, and it's goodbye from Gareth Stringer.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next time.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember to stay tuned into this frequency, Extended, Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
We've got to go get this done quickly before Gareth goes sleepy buys. Is that right? Peter, just one thing.
Yep.
I hope we missed out one amazingly big news story involving 8 Merlins.
I think we probably have, haven't we?
Yeah.
Over the UK? I don't know.
Yeah, we have.
Point that in Gareth's direction.
Just,
direction.
You could just...
Yeah, I mean, it's the latest volcano is, now I'm going to sort of see if I can pronounce the name. It is actually easier to pronounce than the
last one.
Bada Bunga. It sounds like one of Berlusconi's sort of parties.
I did avoid trying to pronounce that, Tim, so well done.
Bunga Bunga. It's not a Bunga Bunga party.
A British engineering company based in rural Dorset. I've just left one of the most positive UK aviation stories I've heard for some time. A British engineering company based in rural Dorset. Can't get this right, can I? I really hoped you weren't going to do that. You know, I saw.
Did you suspect?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I knew you were going to do it because I saw yours. I saw you and you setting it off on everyone else. I thought, thank God for now, I got away with that. Oh dear.
Extend it.
This is XTP Media.